Welcome to another episode of The Leadership Enigma. Well, we are growing and we are learning. Who would have believed it? 60,000 views on the YouTube channel last week. Why? Well, because we actually started telling people about the YouTube channel. So go figure. So here's my request. Please, will you start to subscribe to the channel? Because the bigger the community, the bigger the opportunity. And the guests keep coming, which is wonderful. As we also start to answer the question, Adam, what are you going to do for episode 200 and beyond? I just don't know. And I can see my next guest smiling already. Now, this is an episode on all things intrapreneurship. Yes, you've heard that term right. You've probably heard the term entrepreneurship, but have you heard of the intrapreneur? This is something that perhaps lives with inside a corporate, or is it? How is it different, or is it, to an entrepreneur? What are the component parts? Again, I have so many questions, and like all episodes, I've got to find someone far wiser than me to help me in relation to all things intrapreneurship. So I'm going to have the wonderful Lewis Gump, who is a digital media veteran, has worked with organizations such as CNN and the Weather Channel, and he is now, dare I say it, hot off the press, a best-selling author. But I'm getting him to tell us all about that when he comes on. By the way, he's also a dad like me, and he's active in his own community, so this is all about paying it forward. If you've had great careers, then how do you actually start to pay it forward? I love all of this. Come back to me just after this short intro. Don't miss this episode. Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and welcome to The Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked, award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. Lewis, it's a massive warm welcome to The Leadership Enigma. I never quite know what I'm going to say during those intros, so I'm as surprised sometimes as you might be.
Thank you, Adam. I'm honored to be here, and I love hearing the intro.
Now, tell us where in the world you are right now.
I am in Atlanta, Georgia.
Now, Atlanta, Georgia is a great place. I've certainly watched some phenomenal sport in Atlanta, Georgia. But I don't want to dwell on that. I kind of want to dwell on the very limited introduction, like digital media veteran. Firstly, when I say that, I don't in any way want to make you sound old. When I use the veteran, Lewis. So help us understand digital media veteran. What does that mean?
Sure. So I had the opportunity to start at the Weather Channel in 2001, which in some ways seems like a long time ago. And in other ways, not all that long ago, the desktop-based internet and web experience was growing,
yep,
and the mobile revolution was just starting as it relates to wireless data. And I had a chance to work with a bunch of really talented people to build platforms and brands and kind of reach millions and millions of consumers with our products.
Now, when you talk about that time, 2001, which sounds a long time ago, but let's be honest, it wasn't a long time ago. Was it like the gold rush? Was it like the wild west? How did it feel being right in the heart of that storm?
It was both. It was a gold rush, wild west, one of those proverbial best of times and sometimes most challenging of times, as we were simultaneously seeing tremendous opportunity ahead, but also just had a wagon load of challenges in front of us, including adapting to new technology, people learning new things, people going up the learning curve. And so we were figuring it out together.
What was the biggest lesson you think you stumbled across maybe when you were in that era? And it may well be something that you've pondered now many years ahead. But do you look back on that time and think, wow, I learned a very powerful lesson?
There are many, many lessons. There are a couple of them that I will call out immediately. Yep. One is directly related to the book, and that is, what is small today can be big tomorrow. We saw that with the desktop base. We saw that with the desktop web.
Yep.
We also saw that with wireless devices. And I can tell you, in the middle of 2001 at the Weather Channel, we had a nascent wireless business. We still didn't call it mobile.
Right.
There were candy bar phones and flip phones, and Nokia was, I believe, the biggest provider of devices at the time. I was one of them, along with others. And we said, hey, you know, most people are using those phones for phone calls, maybe a little bit of texting, but we think it's going to be big someday. We couldn't prove it. We just thought so. And it turned out to be that way. And the second lesson was, oh my gosh, what you can do when you get a bunch of talented people together. You may not know exactly where the road is leading, but if you chart the course and then get moving, you can accomplish a lot.
You know, Lewis, I'm reminiscing slightly because I have fond memories of the old flip phone or the clam phone or whatever we called it then. And do you remember the original Nokia? Was it the 8310? I think it stored 100 numbers and that was it. You could throw it off a building and it would still make calls, receive calls and send the odd text. Or maybe you could play Snake on it. So as I say, these things feel ages ago, but maybe not ages ago. Now, I know you went on as well and you actually worked with CNN. So these are big media powerhouses. And so tell us a little bit about that role within CNN, again, within the mobile field.
Well, I had spent about 8 years at the Weather Channel and our talented team had gone from having a relatively small position in the space mm-hmm. to really making a difference for lots of people. And so at CNN, we had a chance right then to launch CNN's first iPhone app. Before too long, we had an opportunity to launch the Android app, but it just wasn't alone about the products. It was also about creating new patterns of behavior. It was about complementing other platforms. And in this case, of course, CNN has an incredible brand and role on the television platform traditionally, and also on the desktop web. And so what we found is that if we did our job well with mobile, then we could simultaneously reach a lot of people on that platform while complementing the broader brand.
Now, I love you used a phrase a little earlier where you said something can start small but end up very, very big. And who knows, maybe the leadership enigma will be an example of that one day, Lewis. We'll have to get you to help us at some point. But do you think you or the team realized just how much would change in a 20-year period?
I think we didn't. I think we were convinced that a lot would change.
Yep.
And directionally, we were on target. And we said so in the strategy. But on the other hand, the foundational changes were so hard to see at the time. You know, we would say, for example, in the neighborhood of 2009, we would say, we think mobile access and the mobile audience is going to be bigger than the desktop access and audience someday. And we'd just get laughed out of the room. People were busy doing other things in some cases. On the other hand, there were a lot of people who saw it. They saw it coming and they embraced it. And we worked with people who kind of helped to see that. And, you know, I have to say, we relied on many people, including those who were decades long veterans in the business to make, you know, the potential of this business a reality.
And this is really the platform for the conversation, because I haven't yet had an episode, I have now, which is this, to really focus on the intrapreneur. Now, not everybody may have heard that term, and I'm going to come on to asking you for a definition soon. But it sounds like you were in a highly creative environment within a large corporate, actually quite an iconic yes. brand as well. And things were changing very, very quickly. And you're iterating. And as I say, you're creating. So in some ways, you're probably in the middle of the intrapreneurship machine. And so let me also provide some context. Let me ask you to. You've just written a book called The Inside Innovator. Now, that I know is available for everybody very, very soon. But you've got some hot off the press news, haven't you? Why don't you share that?
I do. I just learned this morning. And frankly, I was focused on other things. And then I heard from my publisher, and I have to look at my notes on this.
Yep.
In the US, we have been named an Amazon bestseller in organizational change and strategy and competition. And also, we have been designated a hot new release in those two categories, plus workplace culture. So it appears that we're onto something.
And we are in a good place. Now, I know I've only asked you for a couple of examples in relation to your phenomenal career, but I want to ask you something again as this pops into my mind. The news at the moment. We seem to be a very polarized world. We've got very powerful people in the world describing or have certainly come up with the term fake news. We've got AI creating digital media that simply is fake as well. So what are your thoughts for someone who's been within the media business for so long about this fake news, the polarization, and the importance of maybe we just have no idea if what we're seeing or what we're hearing is true? We just don't know anymore.
You are touching on a topic that we could spend all day on.
I know,
it's
I'm sorry.
So important. It's important to us individually. It's important to our communities. It's important to our society, our countries, and ultimately kind of on a global stage. I have many thoughts on this,
yep.
But they start with a simple observation, and that is that reliable and professionally produced news that is fact-based is critical to our society. And we see it every day. And so one of the things that gave me a lot of fulfillment was to join together with many other talented journalists, many other talented business people, other people in the field who were dedicated to connecting people around the world with the news that mattered. I will say also that there has been a shift in the last 10 to 15 years since I was more focused on kind of the global news stage. And that is the polarization that you mentioned. Mm. And sometimes it's hard to have a conversation. We all seem to be going into our own tents, so to speak, to talk with other people who agree with us. And so what I would say there is not only do we need the fact-based news, but also we need to make sure that we're listening to others, understanding different points of view, and doing our best to make sense of what's going on around us.
Now, I had a conversation with someone. I can't remember whether it was with you now or someone else, Lewis. So there you go. There's a senior moment. And they were saying, if you think about the newspapers, they're still around, the broadsheets. And if you're looking through the newspapers, if you are of a certain political persuasion, you are still seeing articles which are perhaps giving you a different view or a more objective view. So you can scan and you're seeing things that might challenge your point of view. Am I right in thinking, though, with the digital side of things, that from an algorithmic point of view, you're getting fed the echo chamber. So in some ways, if I've got a point of view, I'm having it reinforced and I'm not actually seeing anything that's an alternative. Is that a fair comparison?
I think it is a fair comparison. I also think that there are antidotes.
Right.
You know, on the one hand, if you're dealing with simple algorithm-driven experiences, it is possible to end up with things that fall into a narrow silo.
Yep.
On the other hand, if you're curious, and I know that your show focuses on curiosity a lot, and also if you're willing to explore different sources and be proactive, you can find many different points of view and different stories. You bring up a very good point about the traditional newspapers, and so many people I know don't use them at all. I still do. On purpose, although I combine that with many digital experiences and with video. But I think it is possible to get, let's say a healthy, balanced diet.
Yep.
It takes some work.
Yeah, you're right. I think we've got to be a little bit more deliberate maybe about where we're getting all the sources that we're looking at. Let's dive into really this conversation about intrapreneurship, the intrapreneur. Now, I know you wrote the book because you thought there was a gap in the market. What did you mean by that from your experience?
So I'd first like to define entrepreneurship.
Please.
Entrepreneurship is creating value through innovation and growth inside a larger organization. I'll say it again.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurship is the practice of creating value through innovation and growth inside a larger organization. And it has many, many different manifestations. And so what I found as I was looking at the marketplace and thinking and reflecting about my own experience,
mm-hmm.
I was thinking that, wow, where's the source? Where's the definitive source on this topic of entrepreneurship? And I read a lot. I'm very interested in hearing from others on what they think. And one of the places I looked is to the literature on entrepreneurship. A lot of it's very good. I've read many books on the topic. And I also looked to the literature for C-level executives, people who are running large organizations, for-profit, nonprofit, otherwise, yeah. Also very good in many cases. But I still didn't find what I was looking for. And so about 5 years ago, I started thinking, hey, if it's not there, somebody ought to write it. Maybe I'll do that. But it was a side note because I was busy, you know, busy with work, busy with family, busy with community and whatnot. And then in the fall of 2022,
yep.
As I was stepping back a little bit and I was thinking I was going to go build something else. And actually somebody offered me the opportunity to go do that. I thought, wait a minute, maybe now's the time. And then I thought, when's a better time? And my answer was singular. There isn't one. And so I decided to start writing then, and now the book is being published in March.
Now, so much is said, written about the entrepreneur. There are many iconic figures out there who are now the heads of monolithic companies who, again, are identified as entrepreneurs and the entrepreneurial spirit. And I hear large organizations say, we need an entrepreneurial spirit inside ourselves so people have an owner's mindset. So how long has the focus been on the intrapreneur, and have we undervalued the intrapreneur for some time now?
All important points, and I'll try to take them in order. As it relates to entrepreneurship, entrepreneurship is critical. And one of the points I make in the book is what I'm writing about here is not a value judgment relative to entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship is critically important in many, many ways. This is a companion. In fact, one of the findings, one of the ones that I really didn't see coming very well, was that entrepreneurs who are very successful often help entrepreneurs to succeed. And entrepreneurs who are successful building new companies bring the technologies and vision and the capabilities that maybe the entrepreneurs need. So there's a very symbiotic relationship here. So, that said, I think we have undervalued entrepreneurship. There was a gentleman named Gifford Pinchot,
yep,
who wrote a book that was published in 1985 called Entrepreneuring. It's an excellent work. I refer to it in my book. And by the way, I think there are a lot of great sources on this. So I'm going to do my best to kind of shine a bright light on others who have done great work.
Thank you.
That's relevant. But he wrote a book, Entrepreneuring. And then after that, a number of different articles were written. People made observations. You can even find the term in performance reviews. But on the other hand, it's kind of lived in the shadows. And I want to pick up on another thing that you raised there. You know, some people do refer to entrepreneurship and say, hey, let's be more entrepreneurial. That's fine. There is a risk, however. There's a risk also in using the term corporate entrepreneurship, although it's not wrong and it can be helpful. The risk is that it suggests that entrepreneurship is simply derivative of entrepreneurship. And I've come to the clear conclusion that they're not derivative, rather they're cousins. And so entrepreneurship is a combination of several things, including, you know, entrepreneurial spirit, you might argue, but also of innovation, of leadership, and of excellence. And when you combine those four things together, you find kind of innovation in a corporate setting. Long story short, entrepreneurship activates innovation.
Many questions. I'm hearing loud and clear that actually when we talk about entrepreneurship and intrapreneurship, as you say, they are in addition to, not instead of. And I think you've, yes, decided, you've defined them as close cousins. Do organizations, do you think, embrace intrapreneurship, or are they nervous that intrapreneurs want to become entrepreneurs and exit and do their own thing?
Both. Right. And there are many variations on the theme. I love your question, and I'm thinking back to experiences that I've had and also those of many others. In the book, I had a chance to interview 33 people with the same set of questions. And in each interview, I kept learning more things. And what became clear to me is that, you know, let's start broad and then go narrow. Broadly speaking, there's a world of organizations. And then within that world of organizations, some of them do embrace entrepreneurship. But then there's a however, a smaller portion of those that embrace it actually do it well. And then within those that do it well, a smaller group still do it well consistently over time. And so it's a very systematic commitment that a company needs to make. And frankly, it usually comes from the most senior leaders. If the most senior leaders, including the CEO or the equivalent, make a commitment to sustained entrepreneurship, that's when you're most likely to see success.
So interesting, through your research, it's like a funnel. It was getting smaller and smaller and smaller in numbers in relation to, say, some of the things that you mentioned. So anyone who's listening or watching to this, let me try and guide me here, Lewis. Let's try and make this as practical as possible. You talked about the definition of it then. It was about the ability to create value in relation to innovation and growth inside a larger organization. So that's the what. Yes. We talked about it being a close cousin to the entrepreneur. why? Tell me why an organization would want to encourage this, and then we'll have a look at how they actually do it. So tell me, what are the benefits of having this spirit inside and these individuals in the business?
Yeah, so there are multiple reasons, but a handful emerge to the top.
Yep.
One of the most important one, and one that virtually everybody agrees on, I find when you have a conversation, is that entrepreneurs drive a large portion of the future value of companies. You look at just about any major company, and what has happened over time is they started in one place and they built something else and they built something else. They understood where they have permission to play, and then they go there often. Another reason, and this one was a little less expected, was that what I found over and over again in my interviews is that when companies practice entrepreneurship well, they're training the next generation of leaders. There is very little, not a training class, not running an existing business that's in steady state, not hiring from outside or anything else that will prepare a company with the talent they need more than great entrepreneurial opportunities. And there are just endless examples of that that I found. And I've seen even more just reading the paper now that I look at it this way. You know how once you're, let's say you're driving a certain kind of car, you start noticing those kind of cars on the road. I now see it all over the place in the very news sources that you were referring to earlier.
Now, I can imagine that entrepreneurs, just like entrepreneurs, are quite magnetic. Energy, innovation, creativity. Do you sometimes see tension that there are large parts of an organization who might look at the entrepreneurs and think they're the daydreamers? We're the ones delivering performance. We're the ones keeping the lights on and working hard. And I don't know what they're doing. You know, this lot over here are just dreaming and, you know, they pretend to be innovative. Do you find a tension sometimes in relation to, can you actually come and do some work?
No, I've never seen that at all. Entrepreneurs are always embraced. Everybody understands what's going on and there's no tension. You're on it. There often is some. It varies by person and by organization, and it varies based on the type of initiative that one is undertaking. But it's one of the reasons that I wrote the book, frankly. Over time, I clarified why I wanted to write this book. And it came down to three things.
Yep.
One, I wanted to help people achieve more. The second one is to help people build stronger relationships, which is exactly in the middle of your question there. And the third one is to help people be more fulfilled. With this relationship piece, you know, you're driving change. Change is difficult. Many things happen when you're doing that sort of thing. One of them is that you need people to understand how you will benefit them, not just yourself. But you also need the help of other people within an organization. My experience is in a place that's as big as, let's say, a large media company or a large manufacturer, you've got over 100 people, any one of whom can stop you. Any one of whom can say, I don't think so. And when you're small and building something, you really need a lot of help. And so what I see then is that if you find a few advocates, and you have a well-thought-out idea, and you build the team, that's one of the best ways to help people say, oh, I understand. We're going to build something new that's valuable. We're going to build something that amplifies our brand, and ultimately, it's going to be better for all of us. And the bigger the group of people is that with those who understand that, the more likely you are to be successful.
Am I right in thinking as well that if you are the intrapreneur group, then you're also going to fail as well, because you're never just going to innovate and create and land, bang, there we go, there's the next big thing. I can imagine, like so many businesses and industries, you're going to fail and fail and fail. And therefore, there has to be an acceptance to that, doesn't there? And in some ways, a little bit of a playful spirit of, we'll find it in the end, but this is worthwhile.
This is a critical aspect of entrepreneurship. You're right. Absolutely right. Entrepreneurship involves failure. And it involves it at multiple levels. One is at kind of an initiative level. You're going to try some things that don't work. If you've thought about it well and you stick with it long enough in an organization that is receptive, you're also very likely to find success. And I'm thankful to say that our teams have had some enormous successes that I've been associated with. But we have gone in the wrong direction multiple times. I'll also add that it requires some kind of personal resilience, because most people who are entrepreneurs don't like to fail. They like to succeed. They like to achieve. They're action oriented. They're optimistic. And so they want to move ahead. And so it involves some risk tolerance. And the way I'll conclude my comments on this topic for now is to say the most successful entrepreneurs have self-understanding that allows them to accept failure, including very painful failure, as one of the prices for success at achieving the things that matter. And secondly, the most successful entrepreneurs find an organization that understands the same thing. And they have advocates and an environment where risk is tolerated and failure is tolerated. If you have a great company, but one of the reasons it's great is because it expects success in every initiative, it's going to be a tough environment for an entrepreneur.
I remember having Gary Ridge on the show, and Gary was the former chairman and CEO of WD-40, which is oil in a can. And he said to me, do you know why we're called WD-40? And actually, it's because they failed 39 times, and attempt 40 was the one where they got it right. So how wonderful, in some ways, they are embracing the fact that it took them 40 attempts to make it right. So I had Alison Stewart Allen on the show again a couple of weeks ago. She talked about brand. So I'm thinking, if you're an entrepreneur in a large business, there is a risk that if you are failing, is there something happening to your brand, or even from a riskier point of view, something is happening to the wider brand? So the reason I'm asking that is, if you are this way inclined, as an entrepreneur who is inside a large corporate, you've got to be inside the right corporate. Otherwise, this is a brand, personal, and organizational catastrophe waiting to happen.
That's right. There is risk there. There is at least as much risk, and maybe greater risk, for brands that do not evolve.
Yes.
We see that in companies, from Kodak to Blockbuster, and just go on down the list.
Oh, I remember both.
They did not adapt to the times. And so there isn't a risk-free path for strong brands that are able to sustain and regenerate themselves with their existing business. That's a really positive thing for strong people who are working on existing business. I'm aware of multiple lines of business where success in a year is growing 3%. And having an attrition rate that is acceptable and a net promoter score of whatever it is that looks like a good one.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But entrepreneurs usually can't operate in those narrow bands. Entrepreneurs are usually going to have to take on bigger hills with the opportunity to grow more, but also the potential that it's going to take longer, be more difficult. And the same is true for the organizations they work with. And the last comment on this one for now is that when you get entrepreneurship right, there is enormous brand halo that you can create. An example that immediately comes to mind for me is the Weather Channel. The Weather Channel already had one of the most trusted brands, in all the territories where it was active. And when we built mobile, we became even more trusted, even more relied upon, because we were reaching consumers where they were.
Right. Gotcha. I also want to ask this question about whether the entrepreneur, individual or collective, are actually the potential disruptor within the business. Because you talk about those who have got a very narrow set of objectives, and I'm assuming that they're the ones who could be disrupted to the point of extinction. You mentioned Blockbuster, and you mentioned, there's so many that we could. And we've lived through those. You mentioned Kodak as well. Forgive me, that's what. And I was thinking to myself, so are they meant to be disruptors? And in some ways, they may actually kill off certain elements of the business because they won't stand the test of time, which is a good thing.
I had a really interesting experience when I was working on an initiative called News On. It was a company with the idea of local news nationwide.
Yep.
And we had investors from multiple parts of our industry. And what I found as we achieved outsized success on streaming platforms is that there were basically two types of companies in the industry. One type, and I'm kind of personifying organizations here, but one type said, oh my gosh, we're onto something big. Let's step on the gas. And the other type would say, uh-oh, this is threatening our current business. Let's hit the brakes.
Right.
And so being responsible for that company at that time and seeing it firsthand was so interesting. And what I find is that there's a balance. You know, if companies do not pay attention to the risks and threats and impacts of an existing business, you know, there are definitely potholes that can come. My perspective on this is that the greater risk is that if companies don't evolve with the needs of customers, if they don't evolve with the needs of technology, if they don't evolve with the needs of the marketplace and business models, then the greater risk is that they're going to be left behind. And so, yes, entrepreneurs are often disruptors. The most enlightened entrepreneurs see themselves as advocates for advancement of the organization and the brand and the people associated with those two things, as opposed to primarily disruptors. In other words, disruption comes as a function of acting as a steward of the brand.
In many ways, that means that the leader of the organization is embracing and welcoming disruption and trying to build a disruptive function within. So I know we're doing this very quickly. We've looked at what it is and we've looked at the why. And I meet loads of leaders, Lewis, as you do, all over the world. And I use the term exploit and explore, and the difficulty for any leader to do both. So how do you exploit high performance day to day in order to deliver high performance and let's keep the lights on? And that was made very difficult during the pandemic. But how do you as a senior leader simultaneously explore over the horizon, 1, 2, 3, so that you can try and identify both opportunity and challenge coming over the hill? There is this constant tension between exploit and explore. And many leaders I speak to, very senior, are saying, they're 80, 90% exploit, 10, 20% explore. And they know they should turn the pendulum or they should shift that scale, but it's just impossible to do. What are your thoughts?
It's very difficult. Absolutely. Especially if you have a consuming day-to-day business, mm-hmm. Whether it's tremendously successful right now or whether it has more visible challenges,
yeah.
It's still critically important from my perspective to keep the pathways open for this exploration that you're referring to. And companies that are most successful over a long period of time tend to have systemic ways to handle this. I write about this a good bit in the book, but there are specific structures, there are specific behaviors that you can have. One of the things, this is going to sound very pragmatic and kind of nuts and bolts, but you ought to have a budget for it. One of the ways that some companies that are otherwise very promising in this area fail is when they say, we're evaluating budget stuff. We can get 1% out of our big line of business right now. But 1% of a big line of business is typically a sizable amount for an emerging business. And so if companies can allocate funds and have a process for making sure that the most promising ideas and people receive those funds, that's really a good idea. And it brings up something else. I think Clayton Christensen writes about this in The Innovator's Dilemma too. And that is, you can't reliably use traditional evaluation methods for a mature business and succeed at the highest levels for emerging businesses. There are different criteria.
Right.
If you're looking, for example, for revenue by the middle of next year and ROI, and you know, you're looking for X number of customers that's very predictable, wrong place to look. Mm. On the other hand, if you understand that there's uncertainty, that timelines are somewhat malleable, at a certain point, there needs to be accountability. But if you understand that you need more latitude, and going back to the point you raised before, you have a tolerance for some amount of failure or not complete success, that's when you're going to find the successes, a little paradoxically.
Right. So I'm thinking to myself, if I'm the CEO of a fairly large business, so it's a stable business, it's got its core function, product, services, whatever you want to call it. What is some of your best advice then? Because obviously you're saying there's got to be a budget for it. I've been making notes, Lewis, as we've been going. Look at me. You've got to make a budget for it. You've got to make sure that budget goes to the ideas and the people that are perhaps right to take that forward. And a great point you've made is the evaluation methods that you have may simply be inappropriate or not fit for purpose for this line of the business. What else should a senior leader be thinking about in order to try and promote entrepreneurs and a spirit of entrepreneurship in his or her business?
I love your question. And actually, this is an article I hope to write before too long. I've heard it from several different directions, but I've got two more that I want to emphasize here.
Okay.
The first is find some of your most promising talent and give them assignments to innovate. It's one of the best ways to deliver results for your business and also train the leaders of tomorrow.
Question, Lewis. When you say yes. Your top talent, is that a certain type of talent? Because I could have top talent who's not geared for this, but they are phenomenal. They're the best in class. They're the best in class merger and acquisition person, the best engineer, the best accountant. They're not the innovator. So what do you mean by this, the top talent? There must be a certain personality trait or traits, yes?
You know, I've identified 16 of those traits in the book, but I'll name five
okay,
here.
Thank you.
This is really important because you're right. Somebody, you know, it's like if you have a great guitar player, do you really want to make them a band manager? That sort of thing. So make sure that you find the right person. But it's pretty straightforward to assess whether someone at a rough level is going to be, okay. Likely to succeed in this area or not. Here are the five, and I've written them down, so hopefully I won't forget one. One is curiosity. It's number one. It came out over and over again in my interviews. A second one is action orientation. So someone can be interested in tinkering around, but you need somebody who's going to take action and build.
Right.
The third one, and this comes as no surprise, and it's one of the distinctions in some respects between entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs, the ability to build bridges. Someone who can reach out to different people in different parts of the organization to make things happen. The fourth one, we've talked about it a good bit here, is risk tolerance. And the fifth one is optimism. And I describe that as grounded optimism. It's not kind of looking around and thinking that everything is going to work. Rather, it's somebody who looks at a situation, accurately assesses, and then finds a way. And when you have those five characteristics, someone who does that and has the appropriate background, that's where I would say that the senior executive probably is on the right track.
Now, this spirits me to ask two questions. One of them is, I think we mentioned before we were live that one of the eight components that I've identified as the human-centered leader is curiosity. What do you mean by curiosity when you've been looking at that as almost the number one identifier for the right person to be the entrepreneur? So what do you mean by it?
Sure. So I can't claim to have a full understanding of that yet, nor can I claim to have the single definition. That's however, okay. For starters, it's someone who wants to learn, someone who is genuinely curious, viscerally curious, just wants to keep understanding more, someone who's willing to listen to different points of view, someone who's willing to listen not only to different points of view, but ones that are directly opposed to what they think at that moment, someone who's willing to explore. At one point, I had a working title of this book. It was called The Entrepreneur's Handbook. We changed that and we called it The Inside Innovator because we felt that more accurately described what's going on. But then the subtitle was going to be A Guide for Corporate Explorers. This is for people who are willing to go to places other people haven't gone. They're willing to do it with other people. They understand how to tap into the best of other people and the best of the learning that's occurred, and then do things that no one has ever done before.
Love it. And I want to go on to point number three as well, because you talked about the ability to build bridges. And I'm thinking a strength of an entrepreneur has got to be influence and potentially influence over people that they have no direct authority. So they've got to be that person who can connect and can excite others, because I can imagine, especially within a business, there is blockage everywhere. So tell me a little bit more about, your research or your thinking on that skill set.
That's right. So communication, is such an important skill for just about anyone who wants to lead an organization and lead an initiative. And then entrepreneurship has some specific dynamics, including that there are so many stakeholders. If you're an entrepreneur, some entrepreneurs need to work with a whole lot of people. And I've been CEO of two small companies. I understand that you have to have some serious communication skills. However, if you have a vision and some backing, you can go a long way with just a few people involved. On the other hand, if you're an entrepreneur, you can go about, 2 meters unless you'll be stopped unless you have dozens of people involved sometimes. Not always, but a lot of the time, and certainly when you're reaching scale. So the ability to do the kind of bridge building, the ability to treat people with respect, the ability to do what I like to think of as having a round table. I'll tell you a quick story. When we were building the Weather Channel Mobile, there were two people who were assigned to it, a woman named Irene, who was the product manager, and me, and we're trying to figure out a bunch of stuff. But we were leaning on people all over the company, and fortunately, they were willing to help. HR, legal, marketing, product, technology, on and on. And so we developed this mentality that I think of as working at a round table. Nobody is more valuable than anyone else. Nobody necessarily contributes things that are more important than anyone else conceptually. Rather, this is a situation where everybody has something to add. And when you as an entrepreneur can enlist the superpowers of any number of people who have certain functional skills, many experiences, people have been at the company for a long time, people are brand new, you bring them together, again, that's when some real magic can happen.
And entrepreneurs in an organization may actually, to an entrepreneur, have all of the resources, but actually we're talking about resources versus resourcefulness, aren't we? And that ability to manage stakeholders and perhaps delight people who would ordinarily not be delighted. Now, you were adding to, and I interrupted you, Lewis, and I apologize for that. We had a budget for it. Make sure it goes to the ideas and the people that believe that they can move this forward and make it happen. The evaluation methodology could be wrong. Then the talent. And then there was a fifth one that you were going to mention.
Yes. The CEOs in particular,
yep.
And the most senior executives generally, they have to walk the talk. Everything else can be in place.
Yep.
Systems, the values, the budget, everything that you need to innovate. But if the CEOs are not making time for the entrepreneurs, if the CEOs aren't advocating from afar, if the CEOs aren't showing up at the big strategic planning gathering, I interviewed Ashley Adams, who is now with Coca-Cola, and she was describing a leader she was experienced with when she was building an initiative. And she said one of the things that struck her the most was when her CEO spent a whole day on a topic that was critical to the future but was relatively small at the time. And so this is about a CEO's time and attention in appropriate balance relative to that person's other obligations.
There's a role modeling piece there, isn't there?
Correct.
For people to see. I love this. I've made feverish notes because I'm going to put a lot of this in the show notes. So obvious answer probably to this question. How do people get hold of the book, The Inside Innovator, this bestseller?
Oh, thanks for asking. They can go to my author website. It's lewisgump.com,
yep.
LOUISGUMP. .com. And we just kind of soft launched it earlier this month, and we'll be announcing it actually very soon.
And I can put on any Amazon link as well that you want to give me, but I'll put this down. How do they get hold of you, Lewis? If people are interested to learn more, get you involved in what they're doing, what's the best way?
Thank you. So I learned a long time ago to try to make things simple and to be customer focused. And so I put a contact link also on that site. At lewisgump.com. So they can both find the pre-order link, but also find a way to contact me. I love to hear from people. I love ideas, and I'm learning every day.
Love it. Lewis, you've been an absolute superstar. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on to the Leadership Enigma. It's been great fun. I know we're really just superficially talking about certain things, but I hope it's whet people's appetite. And I've certainly got lots of notes, so I'm assuming anyone listening and watching will have some too. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Join us again next week for more curiosity and insight with the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.